Welcome to another edition of the Urantia Radio Podcast. And today we're going to talk about the upcoming solar eclipse. And we have joining us a man by the name of Devin Landis, and he is a Urantia Book reader. And he's also part of the International Fellowship Committee with the Fellowship and present head of YAYA, which is the Youth and Young Adults organization that studies and shares the Urantia Book. And he's got some insights about this upcoming solar eclipse and its relevance and some great takeaways. So joining us this time up is Devin Landis on the Urantia Radio Podcast.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
So I've always been curious to ask people who are more scientific-minded to me, how does the general science of the Urantia Book hold up, in your opinion?
Oh, it's great. It enfranchises the mind, I would say, like with the universal mother spirit living in each creature. And then maybe even paradisical patterns in the plants and the trees especially.
I'm always curious as to how they interpret the Urantia Book. Are they generally pleased with its, like the way that it describes evolution? Does it make intellectual sense what they're saying?
Yeah. I think a good kicker is you could look at chemistry, the relationship between the periodic elements, and envision that as relationship stories told by the architects of the master universe long, long, long ago.
Somebody sent me a thing, a PowerPoint, and it's all it says is God, and it's a PowerPoint, and it shows all these parallel, like, the intricacies of the zebra, you know, or how cells are formed, or it's just an amazing thing, even on a molecular level, why things move around at all. I mean, what makes this move over there and get this? It's like this unseen force that surrounds everybody, you know? There's so much satisfaction that I get, like you, in the Urantia Book because of that very reason. It really makes you think about how things are structured. So the reason I had Devin on the show, Devin Landis, longtime Urantia Book reader, are you in the group that's going to go to see the eclipse coming up on April 9th?
Yeah.
Or April 8th, sorry. And you've got some unique perspective, and I don't even know what it is. I have my perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the last 7 years in my head, I've been thinking maybe there's going to be a rapture, or maybe there's going to be a global disaster, or something is happening right now on Earth where we're all being tested. And I feel like we're in a kind of a seven-year period of something. So let's go back for people who aren't aware. But the first eclipse, or the last great eclipse of the United States, was the one in 2017, and it happened on Jesus' birthday, according to the Urantia Book, on August 21st. Some of us, including Halbert Katzen, who's been on this program a few times, he brought to me that the next solar eclipse will happen on Jesus' resurrection day, which is April 8th, and that the two two eclipses intersect at a place called Bald Knob Cross in Southern Illinois. And there's enough dots there to kind of make you go, hey, what's going on here, you know? So how did you get involved, and what's your interest in this phenomena?
I'll throw a correction, which I think is right. I think Resurrection Day is the 9th.
Right, that's correct.
I asked Hal, and I wasn't sure, but I came to a conclusion of my own about why the 8th. The mortal perspective naturally craves or rejoices in the resurrection, because it's a message for us as to, you know, what we could expect. And from the cosmic perspective, from Nebadon's perspective, I think the Day of the Tomb, which is the eclipse day, is probably the most wonderful, because for already eternal beings, they still probably have a lot of questions as to where was Michael during that time. Like, did he go to Sonarington or I'm not sure which of those paradise worlds are. So that is why, if you were to ask me, why did the second eclipse, assuming that they were timed like intelligently by the controllers, why didn't it occur on Resurrection Day? I'll say that I think the day of the tomb is like maybe the most mysterious when you look at Nebadon as a whole.
Yeah, I think you're right, because they actually admit in that paper, which I just recently read, where they say, we really have no idea what Jesus did for that 36 hours. We don't know where he
was. Exactly.
Yeah, and it is a great mystery. You know, we can all sort of come up with our own. I'm sure you could ask 100 different priests or ministers, and they'd all give you an answer. And, well, he went to the bosom of the Father, or he went to the right hand to gain power of the universe. So what does that mean? Did he get the embrace? It does mention, however, and I was just reading this in paper 129 on the human Jesus, it does say that, you know, the life of Jesus as it was completed had been fully approved by the Father. So he was unqualifiedly happy with the results. So it's possible maybe that's what happened during that period, you know? What do you think? So what's the significance to that and the eclipse? Why is the eclipse, what do you think it's a sign of? What do you think is underlying this? Are they sending a message? What?
I think it's sort of a just a celebratory worshipful situation set up by some power controllers or angels of archangels or some beings in Nebadon or just beings in our solar system that could have the power to move planets, or, you know, Jesus said, if you have faith, you can move mountain. So I think they've coordinated it somehow, geographically.
Yeah.
Just as a worshipful recognition. And the fact is, you know, the intersection occurs in the state that the revelation has been delivered. So
I'm hearing things in the Christian community too. They're saying it's the rapture. You hearing anything about that?
Well, my Christian background, and then which I, you know, the UB upgraded me, and then I don't neglect the old. So I sort of look to 2030 as maybe a significant date, because it's the 2000 year anniversary of the Christ's resurrection, and at that time Gabriel and the angels, they resurrected the dead, and there could be like a millennial resurrection of, you know, so many of our loved ones who are ostensibly, or as far as we know, sleeping in the grave.
Yeah.
Could be upcoming in just a few short years. 2030 is the millennial time. So that's where my most sort of prophetic attitude looks toward.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that stuff that you mentioned, like the war in Ukraine, I think that's one of the trumpets in the book of Revelation. It says where men have tails like scorpions that emit smoke, and they go around, you know, assaulting each other. Not that there haven't been wars in every generation, but I do believe that we are sort of at the point of the needle, or the point of the wedge in a time-space way that is going to turn out good in the end, but it does involve tribulations, which I think the book of Revelation covers pretty well, or it talks about.
Yeah.
I think 9/11 was a trumpet, because, you know, when John the Apostle was on Patmos, he got a revelation from archangels, and one of the trumpets that he wrote down what he saw, he said a mighty mountain falling into the sea, and those buildings were right on the, like, right on the water when you look at the aerial view. So
yeah,
and then
there
it
is.
Turns a third of the water red.
I remember reading in Revelations about the it describes people watching this happening, and it describes them in their boats and in the harbors and everything, and I thought, well, that sounds like Hudson, you know, or whatever, right, looking up at the World Trade Center as they're coming down. That
exactly.
Thought had occurred to me, yeah. Well, then of course, there's Apopka, which is another interesting thing, the asteroid that's coming right toward us, and it's supposed to hit.
Oh.
Yeah, and that'll be on February 13th. which is a Friday, and that's February 13th, 2029. Now, they first told us that it would only come within 20,000 kilometers. Now they're saying that it'll come close enough to where it'll actually be at the same distance of where the satellites are. So there's all kinds of, now I'm not a physical scientist, but I know that mass is attractive. And if you've got this comet, you know, how much would it have to deviate? And it's going to go right over America too, right over North America at like 6:13 at night, East Coast time. Isn't that interesting? And then I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe that's that. To me, I almost feel like, and I don't mean to say this, but I almost feel like something will break and society is going to have to regroup in a big way. And unfortunately, I feel that a lot of people, I mean, you think about it for a second, Devin, you know, there's a point in human history where there were only 100 people left of the fully developed, you know, human. There's only 100 of us left. I mean, there have been multiple times where our societies have been wiped out. You know, the Great Flood when the isthmus broke at whatever that is, Gibraltar, and the floodings, and then the floodings during Noah's time with the ice and the snow falling and everything. So, you know, it's not like God's going to step in there and save us, you know, because that's not that would be against his rules. You know, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he would save us from ourselves, but not save us from just dying. I mean, does that sound cryptic to you? Do you think he would intervene and stick his hand there and prevent this? Or would he go, okay, it's 2029. I'm looking at the way humanity is going right now, and maybe I don't want to save him.
Sure.
I'm glad you have a good sense of humor because, you know, this is what's going on in my head, you know.
I was thinking we could just maybe solicit the Grays to come and use one of their shunting mechanisms.
Yeah, that's true.
They would delight in a project like that.
Yeah. So being a relatively a quick question, just as one Urantia book reader to another, did you have a lot of problems growing up Christian? Was it a big leap for you? Because I've met a lot of Christians that read the Urantia book and they go, that's not for me. You know, sorry, I'm not going there.
Sure. I had sort of stepped aside from Christianity because of the social maybe obligations. And yet I went to a Christian college, and after 2 years of that, I felt I should go to basically the third world or somewhere outside of the U.S. So that's where I found the UB. I think I was maybe destined to, or I was blessed to, I think. And then I did, you know, I basically returned to God spiritually through prayer, and like even in a given moment that I can recall when it happened. And then after that, I started reading the UB.
Yeah. What was the point where it kind of got you? Everybody has a gotcha moment. Was there any particular passage or something going on that sort of connected with you, with the Urantia book? I know for me, it was probably when I read the first reading of the life and teachings of Jesus, when he gets to paper 155, I think, and he's talking about how, you know, you can, you know, not everybody's path is the same. Not everybody is made to serve as a priest. If you've got God in your life, you know, then everything is sacred, that kind of, and it was that sort of approach that really got me into, like, wow, it really touched me, you know?
I was living in a church, in an apartment above a church, and going to UMass Amherst and reading the book, like, very diligently to try and get through it, and so many things were novel, but I do think I remember the sort of making a supreme decision at one point, just wanting to be a part of the God's plan on a way that would involve me, and that was so thrilling. So I think that was my moment. But what got me to that moment was other people who I saw reading it, and or other people who are already interested in it. So the community wins or won.
How did they come across to you?
Just like balanced and logical and sort of picking up where, I guess, Christianity couldn't or didn't answer some things, but then being real individuals in the world. So all those things are appealing characteristics.
Do you have people in your family who also have been turned on to the book, or do you have any friends that you've turned the book on to and have success with that?
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Talking about community and community inspiring people, if I could do a plug for a project I'm working on.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like a 6-year calendar that would start this fall or autumn, reading the book one section a day and only during the 5 work days. And then with 2-week breaks, or 2-week breaks during Christmas and New Year's for 6 years. And it gets us through the whole book and making up an image that's like a calendar that you could cross off dates. Yeah. So,
all right.
Yeah, that's going to be my new project.
Well, you might as well tell everybody how to get a hold of you so that if you want to maybe commensurate with others who would join you on that, you know?
Sure, yeah. Might be releasing it like through Yaya, Youth and Young Adults.
Yeah.
With the fellowship. But I just got the domain called You Read Through, the letter U, read, and then through, THRU.com. So I'm going to post an image up there and
okay.
I'll just promote it at conferences. The essence will be to have an actual calendar that you could X off, but I think people might do like a reading group as well, daily reading on maybe Facebook.
Or Zoom or something like that, yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
Right.
Well, there's better ways for people to connect, yeah. Do you go to a number of the conferences? And if you do, give me a report. What's got everybody excited these days?
I haven't been to a UAI one in a long time, but I'm going to go to Baltimore here in just about 2 weeks. So that should be great.
Yeah. I talked to a woman who came back from the World Religions Conference, and I think a gentleman by the name of Byron, who also went, the report is that people are starting to get a little curious about the Urantia book. It's only taken them 100 years, you know, but we're making progress.
Nice.
You know, I'll tell you something that's funny. Awesome. In the 80s and the 90s, when I first started reading the book and coming to grips with the fact that it was a revelation of epical proportions, you know, I thought, well, you know, people aren't really hungry for it right now, it doesn't seem like. And now you flash forward to 2024, and now I see why the book is relevant. Mm. I'll just leave it at that. There's some serious... I think, Halbert, there's some serious issues that we have to address. We are an emerging, evolving civilization. We're a special project. We're Michael's home planet. He has a vested interest in us and our success, Melchizedek, Adam and Eve. Caligastri would love for us to fail, because if we fail, that means that Michael failed. And we're seeing this emergence of real evil in the world right now. And I think people are being forced to make a choice. Unfortunately, I don't think they're making the right choice in many ways. I don't know. But it is an interesting time. It's more interesting now than it was 40 years ago. I appreciate now more than ever what the Urantia book's real value is, which is to bring equilibrium. I mean, we are operating blind. You know, every person on this... Yeah, right?
I just picked up an interesting crossover. It's this book called The Book of Thomas that is like a Gnostic gospel, or one that it's not in the Bible, and it's only about 20 pages. I didn't know when I was reading it whether it was like UB or Christian. It was sort of this bridge, because I think in the Jesus papers, Melchizedek and the Midwayers, who I like to call, they're like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah.
they reference, I think, this gospel of, according to Thomas. At one point in the book, it says when Thomas because you know that Jesus and Thomas, I think at one point they spend some time together.
Yeah.
And they like come back and I hope I'm not confusing with the John Mark story, but like Thomas is charged not to say anything to them.
Yeah. I have a recollection of that myself.
In the book of the Gospel of Thomas, that's recorded, and he says to his fellows, he's like, if I would tell you what he told me, you guys would stone me.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you gonna? Where are you gonna stay? You're gonna go to this thing. Are you gonna go a couple of days early? What's the general plan for your Rancho Book readers? Do you know a lot of people that are going to? It's in Alton, right? Alton, Illinois. Like just on the edge of town or something like that. I've not seen it, but apparently it's a beautiful cross. It's over 1,000 feet. It's got the word peace at the bottom. I actually Googled a few photos, and it's got a beautiful picture. I'm not sure if it's pointing. Well, if it's looking eastward, then it's looking over the Shawnee National Forest, which is a beautiful. Do I have that right? Do you know?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Is Carbondale, Illinois, maybe the biggest town nearby?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Halbert brought up to my attention that the prophet, one of the few prophets mentioned by name in the Urantia book, is from the Shawnee tribe. And it
That's
was,
it. It's in Squatawa.
Yeah, and he predicted the downfall of the white man.
So, really?
Yeah.
No. Oh, no, he denounced the vices
of the white
the white man and predicted an eclipse in the 1800s.
And he was right.
In that exact area, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, any final thoughts you want to share before we part ways? It's been a pleasure meeting you.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Sure. Just, I guess, yeah.
What do you want to get out of the... Do you believe, perhaps, that we're joining in this... You said something earlier that kind of stuck with me. In this event, April 8th, at the Bald Knob Cross, a lot of people are going. There's going to be all kinds of people going. I'm guessing probably a few thousand people. The media is not covering it, of course, you know, at all.
Truly.
Right. They're covering the eclipse, but they're not covering the convergence at Bald Knob Cross, which is the bigger story. But they don't want to get into that messiness. You know, they don't like to get too religious, even though everybody's hungry as hell for it. But do you think that we're going to be celebrating in concert with a greater celebration that is going on in our system government, our spiritual side? Do you think there'll be a big celebration going on that day?
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assumption. Yeah, that there would be a lot of visitors and that a lot of heaven would look down upon us.
Maybe something miraculous will happen. We need a miracle, you know?
It's a bit, yes, it is a bit of a miracle.
Well, maybe when it's over, you can come back on and tell us your experience, share your experience. Would you do that?
Yeah, sure, round two. And I would say, like, to be anywhere in the totality path would be well worth it. Just, if nothing else, for the supremacy aspect of seeing that... maybe from the science supremacy aspect, it's a beautiful phenomenon. And somebody recently was showing me how like leaves or like a shadow. I had never noticed this in 2017, but there's like when there's only the corona of the sun visible, there's cool things that happen with the shadows. But yes, just on a science level, in the zone of totality, when the final ray of the sun is obscured by the moon, it's almost like a light switch. And suddenly the stars are out, and it's just pretty marvelous.
Have you heard about the comet, the Devil's Comet?
Going to be to the left of it.
Yeah, you'll be able to see it during the eclipse. They're saying there you might be able to see this comet, and it has a weird characteristic because of the, I guess it has volcanoes or something, right? And
on the comet?
Yeah. And it only happens once every 77 years where we see it for this one day. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And it happens in the zone of totality on the resurrection day.
Nice.
I mean, the longer that you look at this, the more interesting it gets. It's like one of those. Yeah, it's just an amazing phenomenon. Well, listen, brother, I hope you come back on and share your experience with us.
Okay, I will.
All right, man.
I will.
Blessings be with you. And thank you. Thank you. Devin Landis joining us here.
Trouble like a soldier saying, I don't want to spend